and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to your Golden Gophers baptized, exorcised the demons from Natchitoches, Louisiana, as in what I think I would say was the quickest laugher in the modern history of Gopher football occurred Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, as your Golden Gophers took care of Northwestern State in a 66-0 lightning delay shortened game, of which was very odd throughout the entire game, of which no point did that game ever matter, ever exist, in terms of from the opening play, they took care of business. It was 35-0 at the end of the first quarter. But, Luke, we have so many conclusions to draw that I'm sure many fans want to get into. How are you today?
I'm pretty good, man. You want to know something kind of ironic? You said it was a lightning delayed game. For like the fourth time that I walked down to the bathroom to take one of my kids to the bathroom, I actually saw the chart that is in the bathroom to say where the emergency locations are. I was actually at the San Jose State game that had the delay where you had to go to Williams Arena. This was a game where Strevler, maybe threw for 3 yards and ran for...
Well, first of all, put some respect on Chris Strevler's name. That's Winnipeg Blue Bombers legend.
Oh, yeah. And Chris Strevler. And also one-time NFL quarterback. We better give him that credit.
New York Jets preseason legend Chris Strevler to you,
and,
Luke.
And he was with the Cardinals, I think, too. But yeah, okay. But I saw that map and I was like, I literally thought to myself, man, could the demons, like, they gotta just want this thing to be over somehow. And all of a sudden it was, and they actually called the game, which like blew my mind that was even possible. But it was. So instead of playing the full 60 minutes, like PJ always talks about, they played the full 56. So,
of which, in the most PJ Fleck vernacular possible, he talked about that specific thing after the game.
Oh, did he?
Well, he goes, well, we played 54 minutes, so we're going to have to make up those 6 minutes somewhere else this week. Now, he's saying it in jest, but yes. I'm also like, PJ, it just sticks to the brand.
Yeah.
I'd also say, Luke, we got some messages from some people that many of our listeners actually took us up on our advice to do what you exactly did on Saturday morning, which was bring someone that you normally wouldn't to a game that doesn't matter to get them indoctrinated into college football, whether that was a friend, whether that was your young child. So I must ask, how was your maroon madness out there in lot 37?
All right, man. We had so much fun again. The group that we went with, this is now the second year we've done it. I have to imagine we're going to continue to do it again. The maroon madness was a hit. If you have no idea what maroon madness is, Dinkytown Athletes, along with Grey Duck Vodka, concocted a cocktail. Ryan and I actually shot a little promo for it of how to make it. Actually, Ryan, if you recall this, and I assume you did because you didn't drink that much that day, my six-year-old filmed it. And we had a lot of struggles, but we finally got there because we didn't have an adult to shoot it. So we asked the six-year-old to shoot it. But yeah, it was a huge hit. I mixed it. I mixed everything, Ryan. So, you know, there's the lemonade, cranberry juice, and then in the raspberry puree, I pre-mixed all that. So then you could throw in the club soda for the kids, so they could run around with the club soda. The kids absolutely destroyed it. And then, you know, some of the adults had the adult version as well. But we had a great time. The kids were playing football. My son, you know, my four-year-old ended up getting pushed by a six-year-old brother and, you know, getting a nice goose egg on his head in the parking lot. But that is tailgating, Ryan.
You love being a father for those type of moments right there where you're trying to calm down the four-year-old who's mad at the six-year-old and also scold the six-year-old for what he did to the four-year-old.
Yeah.
Were you inside the stadium by the time that Jason Sehorn –
oh yeah,
AKA John Nestor had already taken one back.
Yes, we got in there. We always try and get in to see the band. Everybody wants to see the band. So we saw them march the M down the field, and yeah, we had a blast. We did some sun searching yesterday. We ended up being in the shade, but then we found that the sun searching was kind of futile because then you ran into the wind. But we just overall had a really wonderful day. I know a number of people, said hi to me. There was a guy just close in our section, Christian, got to meet him. That was awesome. There was another guy that came up to the tailgate and I was trying to pack up, and he thought I was giving away free beer or something like that. I don't think I was as nice to him. I didn't mean to be. I was just in a hurry. So I want to apologize to him. I wish I would have gotten his name and gotten to chat with him more, but I was in a hurry trying to get in there. But man, it was fun to meet listeners. I guess my red beard does give me away a little bit, Ryan.
Well, that and your 5'9" stature, yeah, that we talked about. I have outlined what you look like to a T, plus people can go on your social media and find out what you look like. I think what I'm finding is people are much nicer to you in terms of your physical appearance than they are for me, which, look, that's my fault for my own genetics and the way I treat my own genetics. I'm well aware of that.
But I
get to spend 10 minutes here in the preamble because I don't know that there's a ton from a 59-0 game at halftime, of which, if you think, I'll say two things here right off the rip, Luke.
Yeah.
If you think Northwestern State is bad, of which they're horrific, how bad is Alcorn State, who lost to them last week by 10 points?
Like, I mean, pretty
that
bad.
That was a 1-0 football team, technically, coming in. Also, Luke, Minnesota scored 66 points before the game was cut short. 66 points ties a modern record for the most amount of points a Gopher football team has scored. Where did that rank just this week in the Big Ten in scoring output amongst Big Ten teams?
Oh, I don't know, maybe top four.
They were sixth in the Big Ten.
Wow.
I'm not even joking. Like, that's how insane it was. It felt like the third week of November in an SEC schedule where Ohio State scored 70 on Grambling, Oregon scored 69 against Oklahoma State, of which clearly PJ Fleck didn't want to have a nice time and didn't kick the field goal at the end of the game to get to that magical number.
Yeah.
But that's the head coaching decision. You also have Nebraska winning 68-0 against Akron. And then finally, your Washington Huskies, Jonah Coleman, responsible for essentially all of these, but a 70-10 victory.
Yes. Yeah.
Minnesota wasn't even unique within the Big Ten yesterday. Sixth best scoring output when you tie a modern record is bananas.
Yeah, I think in part this is somewhat a function of what happens when you change and you have, you know, NIL and the transfer portal. Mostly that, you know, in the Power Four, you're going to have more teams become a little bit more equal, but there might be more disparity between the other levels. But that also said, like, Northwestern State is another level of not particularly good. I do have a challenge from one of our listeners, Ryan. I don't know. I don't know if you're ready for this, but this seems like the right game. So this was a Spotify comment the other day. So for the remainder of the episode, I think you should be challenged to do this. He writes in the Spotify comment, knowing that Northwestern State's breakdown should be somewhat uneventful, I challenge Ryan to slip in as many Avicii lyric references as he can for the listeners to pick up and tally for everyone's amusement. So I think the game starts now. Maybe you found a way even before this. But I do think ultimately this is a game that we're going to have to play, because when it is a 66-0 game, and to your point, was basically over halfway through the first quarter, we have to have fun with this. So as we talk about when the Gophers were on offense, Ryan, I am challenging you to this. Actually, our listener is challenging you to this. Into this fun game. So I mean you got a power. I'm trying to ramble so that we can get you time to start pulling up Avicii lyrics so that you can slowly slip them in.
We'll see if I can slip in. I would say this, it's going to be difficult, but as you also texted me during the game yesterday for one of your seatmates who fell asleep, you looked at me well, you didn't look at me. You texted to me and you said, well, I hope they wake me up when it's all over. Now, I would tell you, now that you're wiser and you're older, you can understand that in a game like that, it's okay to potentially be unexcited in something like that. But It's we'll see how many Avicii types of things I can sleep in.
All right. So the Gophers on the day scored 66 points. Seven of those were scored by the defense. When you talk about the offense, I think the thing to note is the fact that they played three for sure.
They played three. And where were you for the Grant Washington game?
I mean, he was great. I was in section 233. And Grant Washington ended up with 126 rushing yards. Obviously, I think PJ highlighted at one point they had nine guys score. I thought that they probably should have had 10. I didn't think that was a great penalty on what was taken away. And then ultimately the interception was thrown, so they turned the ball over. But I think the thing is you got a lot of guys reps. You saw a lot of people catch passes. You saw a lot of people run the ball. That is really the value of a game like this, is getting them experience ahead of any time that they might have to step in and fill in.
We're talking about a game in which they pulled Drake Lindsey, Greg Johnson, and then center Ashton Beers, which I thought was interesting. Those were the three guys on offense that were pulled with 8 minutes left in the second quarter.
Yeah.
Like, that's how yesterday went, was they were up so much so quickly that, especially with the Darius Taylor situation, which we'll address here very soon, you get the guys out of the game. And that's where most of the backup offensive linemen played more than the starters. I think it was about 50-50, of which number one ranked offensive player via Pro Football Focus yesterday, Brett Carroll, the backup center, former All-American, his first real taste of game action. He looks the part. So it's exciting to kind of look forward towards in the future there. But I mean, Grant Washington had 126 rushing yards. Okay. That was three times as many total yards as Northwestern State had, period. I mean, what else do you kind of take away from that, other than number 21 looks like a player that can help this team in a year or two? Maybe he's going to have to help this team if there's another injury at running back.
Yeah.
Certainly a shiftier type of guy. I thought that Minnesota would have mixed in more Xavier Ford, who got a couple of carries, number 31. But clearly PJ Fleck liked what he was seeing out of Washington, wanted to ride him a little bit there. I would also say the Grant Washington thing is fascinating to me, because Minnesota flipped him from a MAC school prior to his senior season at St. Ignatius out there in Ohio, which is a highly respected program. And then Grant Washington really didn't play a lot for that university, which I know that there was some consternation behind the scenes from fans and even staff members alike about what is going on, because we loved our live evaluation of him, and he's not even playing. Now, I had to go back and look through the Max Preps box scores from Grant Washington's senior year at St. Ignatius. He ran for more yards yesterday than any other game I could find during his senior year.
Huh.
That is fascinating to me, that the St. Ignatius staff just galaxy brained this thing to not giving him a ton of touches. But what do I know? I'm just some guy in my wife's basement talking about Gopher football for a living.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just want to highlight the fact that, you know, 10 guys ended up getting carries, including wide receivers, Lemecki Brockington and Logan Loya.
Who? What was his name?
Lemecki Brockington.
No, what's his name, especially with your sons at the game?
Lemecki Rocket Ship, yes.
I'm going to assume Greg Harbaugh knew you were coming and said, I know that I got to get Lemecki Rocket Ship a touchdown with those two young men there.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that was just for you. I want you to make sure you feel special today.
Yeah, for sure. I think the other thing to note is that Lemecki not only scored a touchdown, but it was great blocking, and he read those blocks incredibly well as he came around on that jet sweep on the left side.
Yes. Of which he owes Jamison Gears and Drew Bibber a beverage, because they couldn't have blocked that
right
much better. I would say, even with Drake, where I'm not going to tell you Drake Lindsey was, again, he had 10 dropbacks, 9 dropbacks, whatever it was. But the two things that I certainly took note of in a game like this, where, yeah, they were certainly playing down in level of competition, but they played like a good Big Ten team against it, was there were two throws I want to highlight from Drake that I think you can take a little bit of data from. One was a third down check down to Cam Davis, which Luke's favorite former Washington Husky what the play was is Northwestern State brought pressure off the right side with some blitzes. Well, guess what? Luke, you've talked about this for years. You put on your Derek Burns hat and you say, if there's pressure coming from somewhere and they're blitzing, guess what you should do to that area that is now vacated, Luke?
Yeah, you should attack it.
You should attack it, which Drake Lindsey sees the pressure coming in his face, immediately hits the hot route in that instance, which is Cam Davis. And guess what? They convert a 3rd and 7. But I think my favorite throw of him from the day was he gets pressure. He rolls to his left, which as a right-handed quarterback is difficult to then make a throw, but he flips his hips and delivers a strike to Drew Bibber 15 yards down the field for a first down. He just seems like the guy that, as we talked about for most of the offseason, he doesn't get sped up. I call him someone with a low pulse where the game doesn't seem too fast. He doesn't get skittish very often. He continues to keep his eyes down the field. The game doesn't seem too much for him. And I will continue to say the differences between a Kirk Ciarrocca offense, who is Greg Harbaugh's mentor or biggest mentor, I would say, and what Greg actually runs now at Minnesota, they are in completely different countries in terms of how different they are with the way that Drake can make audibles and checks at the line of scrimmage, of which I think that's the one thing I want people to remember out of this to take to their friends or their tailgate or whoever their gopher people are, is I don't think people realize that Drake Lindsey is the one making the checks at the line of scrimmage, especially in the run game too, where it's not the center. It used to be a couple of years ago, but it's Drake Lindsey making the run game identifications, which, look, I don't know if you're how many different, I'll be curious once we can get Derek Burns back on here, my favorite cousin, for the Rutgers game, to get his impressions upon what that means for offensive linemen not having that on their plate. Does it allow them to play faster? But Drake is the one making all the checks. Now, he does get to talk to Greg Harbaugh, or at least a one-way communication until 15 seconds left. But the amount of things that they continue to load up Drake Lindsey with, and he continues to do well with those, is very encouraging to me.
Yeah, I think, too, I'm glad you bring this up again. There are just no remnants of what Kirk Ciarrocca's offense had been under P.J. Fleck with Greg Harbaugh. I mentioned this last week. There is no more RPO, right? There's no more look over to the sidelines. This looks a lot more like kind of a modern day, like Kyle Shanahan NFL offense. If you had to compare it to something, just all in all, this just isn't Ciarrocca's offense at all. And I'm glad you call that out. And they do give a lot of responsibility to the quarterback. And in some ways, it is more efficient because you don't have the latency of having to relay information in and out from the sideline. It's just kind of refreshing in some ways. Now, there are going to be mistakes made, and we'll see that happen over time. But at least now, especially as you talk about Drake as a processor, he just seems to have it. Now let's see if he can do it, you know, at Cal and then in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, the competition level is certainly going to be a step up very, very soon here. But I also think people want us to talk about your favorite former Gopher basketball player's son,
Max,
with the pride of Stillwater Ponies, of which I grew up 10, 15 minutes away from that high school in the East Metro. An East Metro kid stands up, throws a touchdown, runs for a touchdown. And I had some people make the comment to me after the game that if you were to have told them 3 years ago when Max Shikanjanski got here to the University of Minnesota that he would be at an actual college football game delivering darts down the field to Kenrick Lanier or even running into touchdown, they would have had some certain things to say to you. But I think games like this make me happy for someone like Max, who came in as a walk-on, has now earned the quarterback 2 job. Yep. I think he looked very competent yesterday. I mean, he played as many snaps as Drake Lindsey did. Mm-hmm. And he seems to understand what the offense looks like against an incredibly inferior opponent. But how much did it make your heart go a flutter when you saw that long last name get into a Gopher game and you're thinking to yourself, this is what initially got me interested in the Gophers. back when his father was on the basketball court.
I'm actually a little bit too young for that to really remember him, but I do remember the name. I've heard the name through the years, and you know, Max really did play well. I did go on to one of the open practices that Max got featured quite a bit. That I think it was that first one, right? And he actually, I thought, looked very good in that game. And we saw an extension of that in this non-conference game here. I guess the question I had, having never watched him in high school, is what kind of arm did he have? And you saw it.
A long way in 24 months.
Yeah, you saw it in that Kendrick Lanier 52-yard throw. Like he has an arm. He can make the throws. It maybe doesn't look as effortless as Drake Lindsey. The other thing is he makes the reads, right? On his touchdown, he absolutely made the right read and was able to get in for the score. So you definitely know there's going to be a little athleticism with him. This isn't like Marquise Gray level of athleticism or size. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was very encouraged. It gave me some confidence seeing him out there. I know against a definitely inferior opponent, but it was really good to see.
Yeah, and then in terms of other pass catchers, I would say the one Coy Parrish catch, I mean, that was perfectly timed. Coy made it look natural. I still think you'll see more of him as the season goes on. He only played 4 offensive snaps yesterday, but so did a lot of people. I still think the range I would talk about with Power 4 competition right here on the horizon is anywhere between, I'd say, 10 on a given game offensive snaps is what I would imagine they're going to be having in line for Coy. I would also say, for those of you who have asked me, where's Malachi Coleman? Malachi Coleman played second most of all the receivers yesterday, and I think you saw where he's at on that interception, of which I don't know what. Look, it wasn't the greatest throw in the world. It could have been thrown a little bit further, but he never really saw the ball, adjusted the ball, attacked the ball. I don't know what the situation there was, but you can see how raw Malachi Coleman is at that in that instance. So
yeah, I the other thing I wanted to, maybe you talked about this, I did listen to you on Gopher Football Sunday as well. I did want to call out probably the best throw of the game though was that throw to Drew Bibber. That was really impressive, but that was by Drake Lindsey.
Yeah, so again, not a ton to draw from this, but I know the thing that folks want us to talk about, and me specifically, because trust me when I say I've seen your emails, I've seen your smoke signals, I've seen your social media messages, your tweets at me, is the Darius Taylor situation, which is on the fourth carry of the game, or fourth touch of the game, I should say, for Darius. He takes the left side on the first offensive drive, and about the 7-yard line, he feels a tweak. And instead of veering into the end zone and scoring there, which he could have, he elects to take the dive, goes down, goes into the injury tent, and does not return. So there's a few different things I want to say here as I step up on my soapbox, Mr. Luke Buehr, is I think multiple things can be true, and I know that people don't like that saying, and that's okay. But hear me out, and then if you still want to be upset with me or whatever that may be, we can hear out the concerns.
I don't know why they'd want to be so upset with you, but okay. I mean, I know you're giving justification.
I don't want you to eat crow for saying that the 30 carries last week didn't influence this soft tissue injury for Darius, which my immediate response to that is hindsight analysis is always 20/20, and it's just we don't know that. And this is kind of what, this is the data points I want to lay in front of the listeners for them to make their own conclusions. So last Thursday night, Darius gets 12 additional carries on that final drive, of which Fleck wanted to salt away, prove a point to his team that they can do it because they hadn't done it since 2022. And then they got an additional 2 days. So it's essentially a long week. And the last time fans saw Darius was that Thursday night. Well, guess what? The staff saw him every day for the next 9 days prior to when you turned on your television or headed down to Huntington Bank Stadium. And I also think the thing that people don't understand or don't know about, and I want to enlighten them, is these players in this day and age, if you've never heard of catapult, which is this
It's a data tracker. Like,
it is a data tracker. I mean, I call it, it's like a sports bra that they wear.
But it's like a Fitbit on steroids, right? Like,
it is a Fitbit that analyzes their heart rate, their energy output, and has, and it's, for someone like Darius, they can monitor throughout practice Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, how do his catapult things compare to what they were in the preseason or last year or whatever it may be, to try and see, are there signs that he's sluggish? Are there signs that he's slowing down? And if there are, maybe we shouldn't play him as much. I would tell you from asking around extensively about this, that there were no signs of that, or even the literal carry before that this soft tissue injury cropped up. If you go back and rewatch the game, there is a conversation clearly had between PJ Fleck and then the running back coach, of which I think it was something about ball security, because like 5 seconds after Darius went on the ground, the guy punched the ball out. But you can see Darius say, I'm good, I got it. And it's like, he's ready to go back in. The plan was never for Darius Taylor in a game like this to get 20 carries. There's no way, in which the number two running back, AJ Turner, on the day ends up playing 12 snaps. Cam Davis played 7 snaps. Even after the first 2 drives, I can't see a world in which Darius Taylor would have even surpassed 10 carries on the day. And it's just unfortunate to me that on the 4th touch, he tweaks his right hammy.
Well, let me just add that I think you're spot on by saying they have more information to be able to look at rather than just pure intuition, right? Yes, they get the eye test themselves, but also, like, how do we think he's doing? They get information from him. They also have some empirical data that they can reference. They also have a medical staff, etc. But the other thing is, the other reality is, Darius has had injuries, right? This is going to be probably one of his knocks when he goes pro, is he has had some of these soft tissue injuries. Assuming this one is another soft tissue injury. I don't think, though, that's justification, in my opinion, to just hold him back in the first game, because you're like, well, he could have another soft tissue injury. I just don't think there's any way to predict whether or not that's going to be possible.
I just think running backs get hurt.
Yes.
I think Darius Taylor has, to your point, and many people are going to continue to be irritated because I use the same vernacular with this, multiple things can be true. Has Darius Taylor battled soft tissue injuries for now his entire Gopher career? Yes. Did Darius Taylor play in his 14th consecutive game yesterday? Yes. Both things can be true, of which when Darius Taylor, in your mind, and that being the minds of the coaching staff and Darius Taylor himself, is healthy, you play him. And he was healthy in their minds and Darius's mind going into the game. I also would say this isn't like this happened after, you know, in like the late first quarter, say,
right,
where it's right after warmups. It was the first offensive drive. I know that there was a pick six on the first play, but then it was a 3-and-out. So he was at least warm and he had just gotten carries on that drive. So it hadn't been he's sitting for 45 minutes. I also don't know what to think, and I know a lot of people want to know, well, is Darius going to play against Cal? Ryan, is Darius going to play? I don't know. To ask me less than 24 hours after the game, I understand you want to know, but we'll see what I hear throughout practice this week going into the Cal game, of which I don't know how much you paid attention because you had to make sure that your 6- and 4-year-old weren't running amok around Huntington Bank Stadium, but he goes into the injury tent, comes out, has a long, I would say, and by long, 90-second conversation, one-on-one, him and PJ Fleck on the sidelines during a TV timeout, of which after the game, I asked him, the head coach, hey, saw that conversation. What did you guys talk about? And can you give an update here? And talked about how Darius was going to be done for the day, but he was really encouraged, yada, yada. Now, I don't put a lot of stock into what Fleck says in terms of what he actually does give injury-wise. But what I do hopefully put stock into is if you were also watching Darius Taylor, he never went into the locker room, never took off his pads.
Yeah.
Never really even, we can talk about Jalen Logan Redding and say Emmanuel Carmo, who got banged up during this game as well. Well, Carmo came out of halftime without pads.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Logan Redding came out of halftime with ice on his knee. Darius Taylor never had ice on his hamstring at any point. Now, if I'm just trying to read too many tea leaves with the severity of this injury or severity, excuse me, I would probably tend to lean that it's not going to be a 4 to 6 week injury, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
But with a bye week on the horizon here, following the Cal game, you could give him 21 days to rust up for Rutgers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what the situation is going to be, and that's okay. But I will certainly keep my ear to the ground and talk about it on Gopher Illustrated throughout the week. In terms of what I'm hearing, in terms of how much Darius practices, I feel for Darius because I spent a lot of time talking with him at Big Ten Media Days about his health.
Mm-hmm.
And he's tired of talking about it. And a lot of people are associating with, you know, everybody just thinks he's injured all the time. And I'm just...
It's not... I mean, it was maybe true his first year. This last year, other than they held him out, I think... in large part for precaution reasons against North Carolina, he played the full season. So
he did. Now, I would argue many people are going to point to, well, he got all those touches last year against Illinois, of which they don't beat Illinois last year without Darius Taylor.
For sure.
But then you saw how he looked the next week against Rutgers, which was a step or two slow. And I didn't think Darius looked a step slow in his four touches against Northwestern State.
No.
It's just... He's a running back that has battled soft tissue injuries, and he has another one crop up. So
yep.
That's why you brought in A.J. Turner and Cam Davis, and you got a little bit of a look at your guy, Femi Ijeboy, yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it will be a running back by committee, and we'll talk about that on the Cal preview later this week.
Mm-hmm.
If Darius cannot go, and we'll see, we'll give our listeners a little bit of an update there, too. I don't view this as... I don't think it's true cause and effect,
right?
Like 100% cause and effect. They gave Darius an additional 12 touches in the fourth quarter against Buffalo. So of course he was going to get hurt.
No,
it is what it is.
I just don't think it's that easy.
Yeah. Like I just would point to for one last time, I think if the data that the staff had with the heart rate, the energy output, what he didn't practice that week, would signal that he is, say, 10% not what he was, well, then of course they wouldn't have played him. I mean, what's the point? But if you're just going to play the offensive starters for a few drives anyway, specifically Darius, of which on that opening drive, by the way, they mixed in A.J. Turner. They mixed in Cam Davis. They was clearly setting up for not a big Darius workload day. But as he's now battled for a third consecutive season, he's dealing with some soft tissue stuff.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on offense? Otherwise, let's catch a break and then we'll talk some defense.
Let's do it.
Ryan, I went out to visit my folks at the farm this weekend. And as we were driving along Highway 12, let me tell you, I saw Blue Horizon Project after Blue Horizon Project. I reached out to them and told them my route. And they said, and I'm not even kidding you right now, there were 34 project sites within a half mile of where I drove from Roseville, as you know, out to the greater Wilmer Lakes area where my family farms. Just an incredible number of these pivoting solar arrays that are collecting mountains of sun and making people money.
I don't say this in jest. I mean it genuinely. Sweet Giblets and Junipers, is that a ton of Blue Horizon Energy projects? So if you want to be like one of those 34 different projects just on Luke's drive, like so many other people have been, what we want you to do is go to bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron, fill out the form today. That is so many projects. Again, bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. Fill out that form. Become their next solar project.
Ryan, once again, the Burns Insurance Agency is here to provide the best service possible. And Ryan, they can shop for you and find you the best deal possible on your home, auto, boat, ATV. I don't know if you know, my dad just got a new basically Ranger, and you know that sort of thing definitely needs some insurance.
It certainly does. And for an agency that doesn't want to be the biggest, they just want to be the best in terms of service. And that's where I've actually been going through the claim service with the Burns Insurance Agency. And let me tell you, it's incredibly painless. We had a big hailstorm come through Roseville in late July. I knew that I had damage. I was up in my upstairs and I could listen to the quarter to bigger than that size hail come down on my roof. And I told my insurance agent, hey, I want to get somebody out here. Can you help me? And within 24 hours, somebody was on my roof. They're chalking things up. It's super easy. And I got a check in the mail today from the insurance company. All I did was just text my insurance agent, or for many of you, you can just give them a call. So if you think that you're paying too much for your home, your auto, whatever it may be, commercial business, support a Gopher fan who supports us here on the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast. Go to insurancebyburns.com, all one word, or you can just email him directly, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
All right, let's talk about when the Gophers were on defense. Ryan, I don't know if you can be much better than 0 points and -1 yards.
Here's what I imagine that John Nestor's father said to him before the field. Okay. I know that the reincarnation of Jason Sehorn, or if you want to go with the Iowa version, whether that is
Cooper DeJean, yeah.
Riley Moss, Cooper DeJean. He said, son, one day you'll leave this world behind, so live a life you will remember. And that's exactly what John Nestor did during this game, who, from the opening get,
yeah,
jumps a route, touchdown. Second, he gets targeted 3 times in this game. First one results in a pick six. Second one results in an interception. Third one results in a PBU,
yeah,
of which I've never seen a coverage score on Pro Football Focus this high. He has a 99.3 coverage grade on 3 targets.
On the literally on the first interception, if you were up like you were, Ryan, before the quarterback even, I don't even know if he threw the ball, but he was definitely looking that direction. He was already breaking, and you're like, oh, that is gonna be picked off.
Just well, we asked Nestor about it after the game, okay, in terms of what did you see. And he talked about how out of that formation, Danny Collins, the defensive coordinator, had told them all week, they're going to probably run hitches, or that's what they do the most. So John Nestor, sitting as the zone coverage, that Minnesota was sitting in cover 3. So he's got his eyes on the quarterback. He's already anticipating the hitch, and he just reads the eyes of the quarterback, jumps it, and we're off to the races for this thing. So it's a game of which I'm sure John Nestor has dreamed about for a long time, going back to his Iowa days, that he knew he could do something like this. And so for him to come out and do it against a Division I football team, it's great for him. I mean, 5-10 seconds into the game, it looked like Justin Wally out here against Maryland last year.
Yeah. Did you see the video they made of those, like, basically on top of each other?
I just pulled it up now. Look at that. Great minds think alike. Yeah. Funny how that happens.
It is funny.
So you have the John Nestor game, but you also just have Minnesota's defense just eviscerating this horrific offense.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony Smith only plays 10 snaps, but comes away with 2 sacks. You have, I mean, I'm looking at some of the guys who played the most snaps. So Minnesota as a defense yesterday, Luke, played 37 snaps.
Yep.
They had 4 players play over 20 snaps.
Yeah.
Yet they had 29 different players on defense get in the game. I mean, Devin Eastern only played 5 snaps. Jalen Logan Redding. Now, part of that's because of his backside cut injury, which we can get to. But Minnesota didn't really allow anything with the starters in the game, of which I talked about last week, how Pro Football Focus credited Minnesota's defense with 0 missed tackles.
Yeah.
Well, the data this week is there were 3 missed tackles, but none of them, you get to have an asterisk by it, were by a starter. So going into the Cal game, Minnesota's starting defense has yet to miss a tackle. Turns out you're going to be pretty good on defense if you don't miss tackles and your defensive line just destroys people.
Yeah, I was going to mention, too, that watching the defense now for 2 weeks, I know that, at least in this game, the opponent was not great. I do think Buffalo was quite a bit better. You saw what they were able to do this week. I think they put up 40 points this week. But what I wanted to say is the defense has been consistent and they've been focused. They, aside from the 1 touchdown they gave up, there hasn't been a lack of discipline. They've been disciplined all around. That maybe you can harken back to the Joe Rossi kind of influence on Danny Collins, right? But you just like to see that discipline, even in a game like this, where it was decided basically in the first quarter, right? But they stayed disciplined the whole game. Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you remember my keys to the game, of which Luke just tunes out and doesn't listen to.
You're right.
I wanted to see turnovers. Well, guess what? They had two turnovers for touchdowns, one via John Nestor. The other one is Zaquan Bryan stands him up. Maverick Baranowski comes in with a Peanut Tillman type of punch. And the pride of St. Rita, Matt Kingsbury, scoops and scores. And they had interceptions and forced fumbles all over the place yesterday, which you should against a bad team. But I love that point that you made, because that's about the thing I would take away so far through two games is, and I mean this in an endearing way to Danny Collins, it looks the same, which is difficult to do. And by what it looks the same is the Gopher defense, where this is now the third defensive coordinator in 3 years, and the standard for defensive play continues to be the standard. I mean, if you don't think that can necessarily be true, I would encourage you to go look at what happened to Rutgers, where Joe Harris-Simiak, former co-defensive coordinator at Minnesota, leaves to become the UMass head coach. He is replaced somehow by a man who literally cannot stop getting high-profile defensive coordinating jobs, and Rob Smith. And you're thinking to yourself, why does that sound familiar? Because Rob Smith was PJ Fleck's first defensive coordinator, of which he then fired, which then brought in the Joe Rossi era. But he is now the defensive coordinator out there at Rutgers, and they have not looked very good through a change of defensive coordinator.
This is
they lost personnel, but so did Minnesota.
Yeah. By the way,
Minnesota played a competent Buffalo offense, of which, to your point, scored 40-something yesterday against their opponent. But to credit Danny Collins, this defense has been focused. They've done their job. They're not caring about who's getting the credit. Now the step up is going to be massive from Northwestern State to facing the Cal offense that has a pretty dang good freshman quarterback.
Yes.
And plenty of time talking about him later in the week. But you goose egged a bad team. You're supposed to. I just think so many people are taking that for granted, when if you're just new to Gopher football in the Fleck era and you don't remember the Brewster days, the Kill days, the Mason days, I'm sure many of you go further back than that. This wasn't always something you took for granted. So not only do you score a modern record for the amount of points in 66, you goose egg a bad team. They never had a chance. They never had a prayer. But the defense continues to look like the defense, and that's what is something to certainly build upon into Berkeley.
Yeah, so we probably should touch on just the injuries on the defensive side. You mentioned Jalen Logan Redding, who went off. He was helped by Anthony Smith over to the tent. I was able to watch that. Also, Manuel Carmo, who went off. Yeah,
that one looked worse than that. Well, both of them looked bad. So with Jalen Logan Redding, for those of you who don't remember the play, Minnesota starting three technique, has played a lot of snaps for Minnesota. He gets cut on the backside of a play 15 yards away. The play is out near the Minnesota sidelines, and an offensive lineman takes a swing at the back of his knee. I played offensive line. I've been in the trenches. I know weird things happen, but that certainly didn't look like a clean play to me. Of which I'm sure Minnesota had a lot of thoughts and same feelings. So I thought that was going to be a lot worse than it was. I think there's more optimism around his availability for this upcoming game against Cal. Now we'll see how the swelling is 24, 48, 72 hours later. But he did come back out of halftime with an ice pack on it. Emmanuel Carmo got banged up. I would be absolutely gobsmacked if he's not in the concussion protocol, because he laid the boom on a kick returner, and he also took a shot in return. And you can see him almost immediately seize up, and he goes into the injury tent, comes up back out of halftime without any pads on, usually a very clear indicator that he's not available to go. And for what I assume is a head injury, he'll be in the concussion protocol this week. But I'm optimistic that they can at least have Jalen Logan Redding back, and then we'll see. Again, brain injuries are very fickle. So we'll see what Emmanuel Carmo's availability is. But in a game like this, you want, as Justin Gard would say, a clean sheet of health. And unfortunately for Minnesota, when the game of football is a car crash on every play, that's not always attainable.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely wasn't the case yesterday. Yeah, definitely had a couple of injuries. This is the game you really would like to see it clean, but unfortunately, that just isn't isn't the way it goes. And why, Ryan? I know you can't answer this. This is more a hypothetical question. Why does it always feel like it's these kind of games that there are injuries, and not just for Minnesota, but you know, in your normal games, it doesn't seem like there are as many injuries. That's the part that's really frustrating, I think.
I don't know. Well, then you get into the hypotheticals of, are guys really going at 100%? That's where some injuries happen, like soft tissue, if maybe you're going less than 100%. I would say the other question I've gotten a lot is, why the heck does Minnesota play a team like this, Northwestern State? And that's where I went back and dug on it. Plus, I listened to Coyle on the Gopher pregame show talk about it too, where Minnesota scheduled this game with Northwestern State back in 2023 because Bowling Green, now I'm sure it was mutual, Bowling Green wanted to get out of the 2025 slot, of which Minnesota is going to play Bowling Green again. It's just later on in a few years. And now I looked at their Bowling Green's 2025 schedule. They do have some power fours on there, and I'm sure they just didn't want to get absolutely decimated. Now, many people would tell me, well, Ryan, what happened when Minnesota played Bowling Green last time? I'm just telling you why that Northwestern State was the FCS team. The question is, why Northwestern State and not, say, a Dakota school? Well, I would tell you, nobody with their right mind is going to schedule North Dakota State. Nobody in their right mind is going to schedule South Dakota State. North Dakota is going to be coming down, I think, in 2 years to play Minnesota. I don't know why specifically the team from Natchitoches was the one that was chosen. I would assume that there were some administrators that have some roots down there in Louisiana that they said, anybody want $500,000 to come up here and play? And so, and they were the ones who said yes. So,
yeah, it's always interesting. I just think the idea that this isn't happening kind of everywhere, and then it's just like, this is only happening in Minnesota, is the only one doing this, that's just silly. At the end of the day, schools like Northwestern State need games like this to make their athletic budget work, right? And frankly, teams like Minnesota have to be able to play teams so that they can fill out their schedule. The other thing that I'll mention, Ryan, is there are a couple other teams that had bye games that they lost yesterday, right? That also has happened. That's happened to Minnesota before too. So I don't know why we make a huge deal of this. This is just how college football works at this stage in the game.
That's a good point. I think the only other thing I would add, just on a micro level about this game, is I've never seen a head coach, when he's up 60, be so upset the way that PJ Fleck was at two people. One was Bob Ligaszewski, the special teams coordinator, and the other one was his punter, which was Tom Weston, because Minnesota only punted the ball one time. And Fleck talked about it on Monday, was he hates it, absolutely despises it, when the ball is, when there's a touchback on a punt.
Yeah.
He talked about how there are very few things in the game of football he despises more. So when Minnesota has a touchback, of which I'll be the first to tell you, if you want me to be negative on special teams, I have not been impressed with Minnesota's gunners. They have struggled to lose people. They have struggled to get off blocks through two games. That'll be something to watch. But the ball goes into the end zone because the gunner's on the ground because he gets tossed to the ground. And Fleck is absolutely irate with them. Mm-hmm. So if you want to extrapolate anything from that, it's that head football coaches can find things to be irritated about when they're up 60 points. And the other thing is, to your point, I think about a team like Kansas State right now, where I can only imagine how awful the vibes are in Manhattan, Kansas right now, because they played Army yesterday, of which they paid Army a substantial amount of money. And guess what? They finally messed around and found out. They looked at the chart after what they had been against Iowa State. They almost screwed the pooch last week against Isaac Frickty's North Dakota team, and Army went in there and got one. Mm-hmm. So Minnesota's no, again, the Bowling Green types of games happen. It's great. Minnesota didn't have it happen to them. They finally are a good Big Ten team, and they put away a horrific team. And now you get to move on to Cal.
Yeah. And not to mention Florida also lost a bye game to Southern Florida, but South Florida is actually pretty good.
Yes, they are, especially defensively.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a team that we can go through some of the Big Ten games now, but I think that's what I extrapolate from the first two games is Drake Lindsey looks the part. Now, Drake, we're going to find out a lot more about Drake Lindsey on Saturday night in his first road start against a Power 5 team that I think is pretty good defensively. Now, they're going to be without one of their top defensive players, a linebacker, their team captain for the first half because he got a targeting penalty in the second half of Cal's game against Texas Southern, which if you're looking for things that could have gone worse yesterday, there could have been a targeting penalty by a starter, which would have then caused them to miss the first half. That's what Cal's going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
And then defensively, it remains the status quo, which is a compliment to Danny Collins and that defensive staff for there's a lot of turnover. Now the competition and the skill position is going to get a lot more difficult, but they've done what they're supposed to do through 2 weeks.
Yeah. Quickly before maybe we talk about some of the Big Ten games, we won't talk about all 18 because there's a podcast for that, and that's called Eyes on Big, and they do a good job. We're not going to try and replicate them, but we should talk about some that maybe are more specific to Minnesota. One thing I wanted to call out, because this is the first game I was able to attend in person, I liked how they did the Gophers and the Pros bit, where they basically have the slides of all the players. Ryan, Max Brosmer gets by far the most love of any of those Gophers in the Pros. Also, I spotted a Max Brosmer Vikings jersey in the crowd yesterday. So it's incredible to me how a guy has one season and has endeared a fan base so much.
When you are a part of changing the Fleck mindset offensively, where we went from run, and row the boat, or RTB just doesn't mean row the boat, it means run the ball.
Yeah.
To Max Brosmer and Greg Harbaugh were able to get him to believe in a passing game and a quarterback again, I think you're going to get the reaction that you get. And I think that's a big part of why Max Brosmer, plus he's with everybody's favorite team, and that's the Vikings.
Yeah, for sure. Let's quickly talk about...
Yeah, we don't have to do every Big Ten game, but I will say this. If you're somehow, after a 66-0 game, feeling pessimistic, number one, I would tell you, go find joy in something. Because if you don't feel joy after a 66-0 victory for a team that you're listening to a podcast about, we need to have some bigger discussions about how life's going. And that's above my pay grade. But imagine how they feel in Iowa City right now, wherever you're listening to this. Because Tim Lester and Mark Gronowski were supposed to be the ones that got Iowa quarterbacks out of the dumpster. And Mark Gronowski,
he doesn't look like himself, man.
He looks like the redshirt freshman who's never played before. He looks the way that Drake Lindsey should probably look, where he's looking down the field and his eyes are just glazed. He's a statue back there. Maybe this is the hindsight of, I understand it's a small sample size. There's only been two games. But when you're trying to figure out things that you can extrapolate from games like Iowa played last week, where they played Albany and won 34-7, Gronowski looked bad in that game. Mm-hmm. And now when he steps up in level of competition when they go to Ames, looked bad again. I mean, he had 24 attempts for 83 yards and a pick. And on the final drive, my man is just a statue back there. And I'm thinking to myself, Luke, what do you take away from what has happened to Mark Gronowski?
I think the question you have to ask yourself in this situation is one we've asked previously about the Gophers. You know, like whether it's consistently poor special teams play from the Gophers or just the insistence on running the ball. Is it the personnel or is it the specific coach or is it the person at the top, right? Are they dictating this? The other X factor in Gronowski's situation is the injury that he had to come back from.
A throwing shoulder surgery that took away his entire spring and into the summer.
Yeah.
I also, that's a great point. And one I've tried to make is I was very skeptical that this thing was going to get off the ground smoothly. It hasn't even got off the ground yet. But even within the arm stuff, I think the most fascinating part to me is, I haven't watched every Iowa snap through the first two games. But when I remember Mark Gronowski from South Dakota State, I remember the guy that ran for 37 touchdowns in 4 years.
Yeah.
And he seems completely unconfident right now. It's as least confident as I think you can have a guy play. I think Tim Lester has, and that's the Iowa offensive coordinator. Now they play UMass this upcoming weekend, but I mean, then they get Rutgers, Indiana, Wisconsin, Penn State before they play Minnesota. And trust me, everyone, I'm well aware of what you're thinking in the back of your head. Mm-hmm. Ryan, it doesn't matter because every Iowa quarterback turns into the reincarnation of Steve Young. Or pick your favorite 90s quarterback.
Well, they just got to score 21 points, so.
Right, and also, this also tells me Phil Parker is still somehow underpaid as he makes $1.9 million every year. But Mark Gronowski, brother, I know that there are going to be better days on the horizon, but it is about as rough of a debut for a guy making over $1 million that you bought out of the portal as I can imagine for Hawkeye fans.
Yeah, definitely. We probably should also talk a little bit about Wisconsin, specifically in this game at halftime. What was it, 10-7? They ended up winning 42-10. Or did I get that correct? Yeah, 42-10.
It was 17-10, and it was 14-10.
14-10. I'm sorry, it was 14-10 at halftime that they had the lead. They proceeded to score 28 points. I didn't get a chance to watch any of this one, Ryan, but I did watch the score. Ultimately, they found a way against Middle Tennessee State when it looked close early.
Yeah, I would imagine the halftime speech from Luke Fickell to his Wisconsin team at halftime went something along the lines of, hey, brother, do you still believe in one another?
Yeah.
Because when you're only up 7 points to a Middle Tennessee State team who lost by 28 points at home to something called Austin Peay,
yeah,
you better have a little bit of a reality check. And the defense woke up. Danny O'Neill looked pretty good, but this was always going to be the case for the Badgers. Is you had two gimmies and they took care of their gimmies, and there's something to be said for that. Well, guess what? Now you get to go to Bama. 3 weeks from now, you get to go to Michigan, and then it's Iowa, Ohio State, Oregon, Washington, Indiana, Illinois, all before Minnesota. Now they will get their high paid quarterback, your boy, Billy Edwards, back. But we're going to find out a lot about Bama, of which I don't even know why Bama's ranked at this stage, but other than they have a logo. Now, they did take care of whoever their little sisters of the poor team was, but it's going to get a lot more difficult. But Danny O'Neill looking the part is an important thing for them, as Billy Edwards' status, I think, for that game next weekend is certainly within question still.
Let's talk a little bit about Rutgers, too, who played Miami of Ohio, who Wisconsin beat the week before. They won 45-17. Ethan Kalikmanis was 26 of 36 with 259 yards and 4 touchdowns. Miami of Ohio, as you'll remember, did play Wisconsin quite a bit tougher. Transitive properties don't exist in college football, Miami of Ohio only lost 17-0 to Wisconsin. I guess that tells you a little bit about Rutgers' defense, who struggled the week before. But ultimately, this Rutgers team is going to be an interesting one that the Gophers will open up Big Ten play against.
Ethan specifically is interesting so far because I would argue he's looked very competent. I also think we can't undersell how important it is that Kirk Shiraka gets to talk to him before the 15 seconds there go off, of which he didn't have that in year one with Greg Harbaugh here. And having Kirk in his head, tell him what to look for, I think is something that has been really beneficial for Ethan. I mean, he's got a 74% completion percentage through two games. It's two MAC opponents, but that's 21 points higher than any other season in his career. And he's thrown six touchdowns with no picks. Now, they play one of your wives. I think it was her second stop on the college tour, Norfolk State,
yes,
this upcoming weekend before Iowa comes to town, and it gets much more difficult for he and Shiraka. But this is a Rutgers team that's offensively humming. I would tell you defensively, allowing 17 points to Miami of Ohio is a choice.
Yeah.
because that team is just, you mentioned it earlier, the transitive property doesn't always exist, but I think there's going to be a lot of points potentially on that final Saturday of September when Rutgers comes into town between the two teams.
All right. Minnesota does not play Illinois this season, but they played Duke, which was one of the games I was most interested in. And let me tell you, I have more and more confidence that Illinois is good with that 45-19 victory over Duke.
Yeah, they did not play well, especially up front in the first half of that game.
Yes.
And they figured it out. And defensively, it helps when you get as many turnovers as they did. I mean, when you win the turnover battle by five, you're going to win a lot of football games and you're going to win them by a lot of points if that's going to be the case.
All right. I was going to say Michigan, Oklahoma is the other one that I did get a chance to watch. I don't know that either team is amazing. Michigan has some issues. And I think mostly, Ryan, the issues might be stemming from a young quarterback. But at the end of the day, there seems to be some trouble brewing, if you saw there at the end. I don't know. This was a game that maybe didn't quite live up to the hype. It was entertaining, and I had a passive eye on it. But ultimately, Oklahoma ended up winning 24-13.
I think what I learned from this game is Brett Venables needed this, and he got it. So
that's a good point.
I think that takes a lot of the pressure off of him that I'm sure he was feeling, that we have to take care of Michigan at home on prime time. And their new quarterback, I thought, looked pretty dang good. It's tough to think about him as anything other than that. Whereas Michigan's quarterback and Bryce Underwood, the guy they're paying millions of dollars for, I think I watched that game and thought, he's got a shot. Now, he's very inconsistent, and yes, I don't know if they have the best skill position players around him. Plus, I think that Michigan offensive line is overrated. But I don't consider Michigan a team, from what I've seen through 2 weeks, as one that's going to be teetering on the college football playoff contender scale, where they're currently at 15th in the country. They'll certainly drop now, but I think they're a year or two away from Bryce Underwood being a guy that you want to push all the chips in on. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And to be, I think you make a good point that he you can see some of the flashes. He needs some more around him. But at the end of the day, 9 of 24 for 142 yards, Bryce Underwood,
it's not going to get it done.
It's not going to get it done.
You're not going to beat Oklahoma on the road if your quarterback completes what he completed.
Right. And I think the reality is, as important as the quarterback position is, it's not your best quarterback with nothing around it is not going to be able to save you. Right. You have to have complementary pieces around, as we've talked about a lot, to be successful in the pass game. A lot of things have to go right, not just the quarterback being able to make a play. They have to be able to execute. That is an important component, but you need a lot to go right to be able to have a successful pass game. Any other games you wanted to touch base on? There aren't other ones that I was particularly interested in. I know that we have Purdue on the schedule.
I was going to note that I'm sad Minnesota misses UCLA this year.
Yeah.
Because it is not the greatest of starts for your man out at UCLA, of which, do people know where UCLA is? Or is that joke already dead now that it's 14 months later?
Yeah, that joke's probably dead.
UCLA gets absolutely smoked in the opener by Utah. Mm-hmm. Lose by 33. Of which I would love to know Martin Jarman's explanation of why then schedule a road game in Vegas against the Fighting Dan Mullins of UNLV. And that game looks a lot closer than what it was. I mean, with 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter, UCLA was down by 3 scores to UNLV.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this thing couldn't be getting off the ground any worse for the Bruins. Now, there are better days ahead with New Mexico and Northwestern the next two games. But for a team that really needed to make a bowl game, losing this UNLV one is not the greatest of starts.
All right, I'll just hit on other games against Gopher opponents this season. We'll just hit scores. We don't have to talk about them much. Well, maybe we talk a little bit about Michigan State and Boston College. Purdue beat Southern Illinois 34-17. We'll come back to Michigan State, Boston College. Nebraska beat Akron 68-0. And then what's another one that I should hit here? Oh, yeah, Northwestern 142-7. Who else am I missing from the Gophers? Ohio State killed Grambling. Oregon State killed Oklahoma State. We touched on Iowa. I think that pretty much hits everyone.
I mean, there were a lot of laughers this week, which welcome to September. And I know everybody wants to watch good games, and that's where for the slate before Minnesota plays, because again, Minnesota's got a 9:30 and Fleck kept saying 9:45 PM Central start next Saturday night. You're going to have a lot of time to watch other games, of which you'll get to turn on the Badgers versus Bama at 11 a.m. next Saturday on ABC. I mean, there's not a lot else in the Big Ten that week.
Yep.
So you might be having to watch something like Clemson, who should have probably lost to Troy yesterday, take on Georgia Tech. But,
yeah,
I mean, Georgia-Tennessee at 2:30. I mean, there are better weeks ahead, of which I'm sure then you can watch Florida take on LSU right before the Gophers play. But mm-hmm. there are better weeks ahead in terms of slates. We're just a few weeks away.
Yeah, Michigan State 142-40 against Boston College in overtime. This was actually a very entertaining game. Boston College actually led at halftime 21-7. I think Boston College is actually a pretty solid team. But yeah, you had a lot of points in this game, went to overtime. Aiden Chiles was kind of Aiden Chiles. At the end of the day, very entertaining game.
It was. So you got anything else before we get the heck out of here?
No, just want to say thank you to all those that listen. It's really fun to do this, to have an opportunity to chat and talk Gopher football. We want to thank our sponsors that make it possible, the Burns Insurance Agency and Blue Horizon Energy. Yeah, thanks again for listening. We'll be back to preview the game against Cal and go Gophers.